Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver. I am very happy to sit with you in meditation, and I really mean that. And we're going to sit for about 10 minutes, and we're going to start soon. So please take your seat, get settled, whether you're seated on a cushion on the floor with your legs crossed loosely in front of you or in a chair or on the sofa. Both are great. And if possible, sit with your feet flat on the floor. And so you feel a little bit more uplifted and grounded at the same time. Although if that's uncomfortable, don't do it. So we are going to continue our discussion about the Four Noble Truths, the foundational teachings of all of Buddhism, whether it's Buddhism from China or Buddhism from Japan or Buddhism from Yonkers. All Buddhist schools, as far as I know, are based on these four teachings. The first of which is very hard to hear. Life is suffering or life is unsatisfying. There's not a lot to hold on to, if anything. Pretending that's not true is what creates suffering, or grasping creates suffering. Interestingly, Second Noble Truth doesn't say suffering creates suffering. We all suffer. We all have loss. We all have pain. We all have vast sorrows and great angers. But according to this, that's not actually the cause of suffering. The cause of suffering is wanting something other than that. I'm making that face because, of course, we all want something other than pain and rage. But when things are happening, as we turn away from them, we create suffering. And when we turn towards them, honestly, suffering, according to this theory, is alleviated. Third Noble Truth is called the cessation of suffering, which means, oh, you could stop. How? Well, stop doing that. Stop doing truth number two, grasping. Well, how do you do that? Now we come to the Fourth Noble Truth, which is called the Noble Eightfold Path. And we're on step number three. In previous talks were about right view and right intention, the first two. You can jump right in here if you like, or you can go back and listen to those. Either way is fine. Right view and right intention are like set the stage for everything else, all the other steps. Because without the right view, without seeing reality clearly, which in this view means just the present moment is real, something like that. And without the right intention, which naturally arises from the right view, the rest of the steps are just ordinary. I'm not going to say impossible, because as you'll see, they're not impossible. But they're ordinary rather than transcendent or magical or transformational. And we need transformational moves right now on planet Earth. That's my opinion. And I would say that now we come to the third noble truth, and it is the one, in my opinion, I'm a writer and a teacher, so it's natural, I think, that in my opinion, this next one has more power than any other to transform the world, to create peace, and to dissolve what we think hatreds and conflicts that we think cannot be dissolved. Big drum roll. It is called right speech. Right speech. So we have right view, right intention, and now right speech, which is, oh, we all do that. I mean, even if you have some sort of a disability that prevents speaking orally, you still write, you still communicate, you communicate. So right communication is what we're talking about here. And I don't think I have to make any greater case for what could change the world than right speech. How much of the world's conflicts grew from wrong speech? That's an interesting question. Right, by the way, doesn't mean perfect. Thank goodness, because who's going to get that right? Right. Right speech means whole, complete, the full view of what it means to use your speech for the benefit of yourself and all beings. So one place to begin is by identifying wrong speech. Don't do these things. That's a great place to start. And there are four qualities of speech that are identified as wrong. And the first is called no abusive speech. So that doesn't just mean yelling and screaming and denigrating people with your speech, although that is terrible. It means also somewhat less obvious things, like you're sort of teasing someone without them knowing it, or you're making fun of them in a subtle way. You are doing something with your speech to push them off their seat, to make them feel less. And I don't think we need big explanation for why that's not good. Now, no abusive speech does not mean no angry speech, because sometimes anger is really called for. And it can absolutely be right speech when it is minus abuse. So that's a tall order, that's nuance, that's beautiful. That is something we can all contemplate for the rest of our lives. What is anger? Right angry speech. And how is it different than wrong speech that is abusive? And by the way, speech just doesn't mean only what you say with words, like I'm doing right now. It means what you write. It means how you communicate in general. So your, what's the word I'm looking for? Your presence can be abusive. If you're communicating contempt, suspicion, hatred. It's not just words that convey those things. So when we say no abusive speech, we mean no communications of abuse or abusive intent. You know, we could spend our whole lives just trying to not do one of these four. And if you could not do one of these four, or, you know, lessen your abusive speech by like 1%, it would all be, it'd be a much better world. The second form of wrong speech is don't lie. Now, that's may sound obvious. I'm like, yeah, I'm not a liar. Yeah, okay, I am a liar. And so are you. And if we can get through, you know, a half hour without lying, it's a good half hour. And I don't mean that you're making up things or being intentionally slanderous, but do you really know if what you're saying is true? Take a look at social media for 0.0001 seconds and see how much is being expressed where you might think that person doesn't actually know if that's true. They're repeating something that they think is true, best case, but do you really know? Now, I'm going to just say that again. Do you really know if what you're saying is true? Because you've verified it, because you've poked at it, because you've tested it, because however you define knowing, you've accomplished that. And this knowing doesn't include I read it by someone who seems like they know what they're talking about. That doesn't count. I just lost my little notes here. It's really incredible how much language is being thrown around that may be, again, very well intended, but is based on in some kind of ignorance. Now, you are entitled to your opinions, your judgments, your critiques, the things that make you angry. Have at them. We need those things. We all have them. But do you know? I'm not going to say it again. That's a really, really important one. So no abusive speech, no lying, no divisive speech. Using your speech to separate people from other people. Did you know that they did this or you did that and they didn't like it? No trying to divide a person from themselves by causing them to doubt themselves. No belittling speech. Now, these things really take awareness, and in a minute, we're going to practice how to get that awareness. It's called meditation. And then the fourth kind of wrong speech. So again, we have no abusive speech, no lying, no divisive speech. This one may be the hardest. No idle speech. Don't gossip. Now, I'm not saying don't talk about people who are important to you or people who you wonder about because you love them and you want to know how they're doing, or because you're suspicious of them and you want to know a little bit more about who they really are. That's not gossip. Gossip is using your speech and the attention of someone else, usually, to diminish another person or group of people. Now, some people should be diminished, and some groups need some damn diminishing. But are you doing it to make yourself feel less afraid? Don't do that. Don't do that. I'm not saying we should diminish people we disagree with. I'm saying there are people who do things that are deeply harmful, and that's the, you know, best case scenario is harmful. Worst case is wildly violent. Okay, let's try to make that not happen. Let's use our speech, our power of communication, to call that out. But again, if you're using your idle speech to make yourself feel better, stronger, in the right, you are sowing seeds of aggression. So I'm not talking about you personally, but generally speaking, no abusive speech, no lying, no divisive speech, no idle speech. That's where we begin in this realm of right speech. And you may notice that the first two of the Noble Eightfold Path, right view, right intention, can feel kind of ephemeral, and they are mysterious. But this one's like, okay, now we're getting to our real lives here. This is what we actually do. So from this point on, the next steps, next four steps, are about how to live, beginning with right speech, which we defined in inverse, what is wrong speech. So now, okay, now what? There are several questions you can ask yourself before you open your pie hole. And these are important questions. And at first it can feel like, I don't have time to ask myself all these questions. I'm in a meeting at work, or my kid's crying, and it becomes second nature at a certain point. So the first question is this the right time for me to say this? That's a subjective question, but you can use your spidey sense, your intuition. You know, if someone's really upset about something and you know they owe you money, you should get that money paid back if they said they were going to pay you back, but that might not be the best time to say it. So that's a really, you know, broad example of, but is it the right time, especially in your intimate relationships? To know if it's the right time requires a deeper awareness of the person you're talking to, like really sense their presence. How's their day been? Paying attention to someone else helps you decide, is this the right time to say this? The second quality of right speech is tell the truth. Now, I don't mean be unskillful or deploy so-called idiot truthfulness, which is just bleh, blurting what's on your mind when it arises without any sense of how it will land or how it will impact or what the consequences might be. But again, we go back to no lying. Do you know that what you're saying is accurate? So you can start with ordinary things. How long did you spend on this project? You might go, oh, 12 hours. But just stop and think, was it really 12? Was it 10? Was it 14? Just start becoming more aware of details in your speech, and then making sure that you are telling the truth. The third aspect of right speech is only speak when you believe that what you are fixing to say is beneficial. Now, that doesn't mean nice, doesn't mean, oh, it's a complimentary or flowery, or that's not what we mean by beneficial. I hope you are getting that idea from these short talks. It means, will it deepen compassion Will it deepen connection? Will it deepen understanding? Now, sometimes what deepens compassion and understanding and so on is sweetness and gentleness. But sometimes what deepens compassion and understanding is sharpness. And sometimes it's silence. So again, it's not like, oh, I just want to be helpful, which I'm sure you do. But it's a bigger view of what is helpful than that, much, much bigger. So that's the first three. And the fourth is, make sure that the way you are speaking is comprehensible by others. So we've all been in classes, let's say, where someone's giving a lecture and you're like, I don't think they know we're here, because they're maybe saying brilliant things, but I can't tell because they're rambling. It's a little disconnected. I don't know why this came first and that came second. So making sure that what you're saying is clear, is comprehensible, again, requires relationship with the listener. All of these require relationship with the listener. So we could even add on that right speech is not different than right listening, right awareness. Right speech naturally arises then. So make sure that you're being clear to the person who's listening to you, because you may think you're clear to yourself, which is great, but is it clear to me? That's an important question too. So we have two more. The fifth is, as best you can, only say it once, whatever it is. So, you know, if you're raising kids, you may have to say it more than once. So it's not like a hard and fast, only say these five words one time and never repeat them. But if you are working on your timing, knowing that you're being truthful, seeking to be of benefit, and know that you can be clear, you probably won't only have to say it once. So that doesn't mean that the person hears you just because you said it once in a perfectly comprehensible way. But say it once and at least wait. I was talking to someone the other day. They said something that upset me, and I really did not handle it well. I said, I don't like that, in whatever way I said it, but very direct. I thought I was being very direct. I don't like it. I don't like that. Let's try to do it a different way next time. And I wasn't getting back in a way that I understood, that the person understood what I was talking about. So I kept saying it. No, I don't want to do it that way. No, I don't like that. And they kept saying, giving less and less evidence that they understood what I was saying. Although I'm pretty sure they did, and I was scaring them because I got harsh in my speech. And then I said, and this was horrible, I said, say back to me what I mean. I got tired of trying to say it, or I got frustrated and my anger got colder, because some people, when they get angry, they get very heated. Some people get cold. And that was an asshole move on my part. And I'm sorry, person, if you're listening. I kept saying it. It wasn't getting heard to me. So I just should have rested, left, taken a beat, and then come back to it at some other time. So then the final piece of right speech is complicated and difficult. And it's, don't use your speech to argue. If you have a point you want to make, that's not an argument. If you disagree with someone and something they're doing, you can express it. That's not an argument. But when you bring aggression in, like, I don't like this, you need to stop it, kind of what I was doing, as mentioned, argument creates more argument and rarely results in resolution. Although there are definitely people in the world that will tell you otherwise. We cleared the air. Okay. Good. Maybe you cleared the air, but the partner in the argument is likely to feel something different. So these are all very nuanced, complex, interesting things, my friends, and they lead to liberation from suffering. So it's not just use right speech to be cool or whatever. It's your speech has the power to liberate you and others from suffering. Now, where do you get the space in your mind to consider what you're going to say before you say it? And therefore, you become much more capable of right speech, timing, and clarity, and so on. Well, we're fixing to do it right now. It's called the practice of meditation, where we sit with ourselves and whatever arises that distracts us from the breath, in this case, we let go of and come back. Now, this is very practical. When you think, I'm using the breath in my practice because I'm practicing something, what am I practicing for? I'm practicing with my breath so that when you talk to me, I can practice paying attention to you. And when my opinions and judgments come up, and my fears and my traumas, all of which are totally natural, I can let them go for a moment and come back to you. And in this return trip to you, my capacity to deploy right speech is vastly increased. Don't take my word for that. Don't take my word for anything. Investigate and see what you think. So we'll sit, and then our next conversation will be about right livelihood. Also, very pragmatic, down to earth. Next time. So let's sit. Please begin your practice by forgetting about everything I just said. Throw in everything you thought about what I said. Just let that go for now. You can always come back to those things. Imagine that listening is like your brain is like a snow globe and it gets shaken up and down. And interesting. Let me follow that. I don't really like that. All sorts of things. Now we're putting the snow globe down. In our practice, we put it down, and all the thoughts, all the snowflakes, gradually fall to the ground, and what's left is clear. So, relax, let go, sit up straight. By your body's definition, let your hands rest on your legs, palms down. Soften the front body, the belly can relax a lot. Let the shoulders relax down the back. Shoulder blades draw in a little bit to each other. And if you had any sense of hoisting or lifting or carrying, let that go. The mouth is closed. The lips and teeth can be slightly parted, and the mouth is closed because you don't have to talk. That's sweet. It's a luxury, and to me, a delight to be invited into silence. So let the muscles of speech relax, the jaw, the tongue, the throat, and relax the inclination to speak, because you don't need that. Right now, nothing is being asked of you. So let yourself fall silent. Because there is no one in here talking. It is quiet. Breath is natural, in and out through the nose. So just normal breathing, however you were doing so before I said breathing. The eyes are open, and the gaze is cast down to a comfortable spot in front. And the eyes are open because this is a practice of wakefulness. And it is wakefulness that enables us to use right speech to be aware of timing and truth and so on. So we're practicing here so we can actually practice there in our lives when we normally go about our business with our eyes open. Let your attention rest on the wave of breath. So we're feeling the breath rather than observing the breath. Feel a gentle expansion on the inhale and a release, a dissolve on the exhale. At the end of each exhale is a little gap, a space, a rest, as they call it in music, a place of no sound. And then the next inhale just happens, I promise. You do not have to try. And again, you feel the inhale dissolve out on the exhale. Notice the little gap, and then again, breathing in and out. Thoughts will keep happening because there's no off switch particularly, nor does there need to be one. The mind continues to make thoughts, like the eyes continue to see or the ears to hear. They don't have off switches, no problem. Let your mind be as it is. While your attention rests on the breath, breath comes to the foreground. Thoughts recede to the background, like ambient noise in the next room. Most of them will come and go. You don't have to do anything. However, if you notice that you become fully absorbed in a line of thought to the point where, this is important, you have forgotten about your breath completely. Good. Now we want to do something because you're not meditating anymore. You're thinking. So label that moment thinking. Say to yourself silently, thinking. Let go. Don't skip that step. Just release whatever it is. Come back to this breath and take a fresh start. So we'll sit together in silence for a few minutes until you hear the bell. Thank you so much for your practice. It's important. Thank you for practicing with me. I really appreciate that. And thank you for practicing together with all the other people in the world who are practicing meditation right now. There's bound to be quite a few. So, may your practice benefit all beings, and may your speech draw to you everything that alleviates suffering.